Dave Rubin. This is the Rubin Report. It's April 26, 2024. We're on Rumble, YouTube, and Locals, as always. Share, tap that subscribe button, and click the notification bell if you have not. And we did note that on Wednesday, we were looking at some of our internal YouTube numbers, and our numbers across the board have just been fantastic. But we noticed that 66% of our viewers were not subscribed to the channel. So I called out to you good people and I said, good people of the internet, trusty Rubin Report viewers, will you subscribe? Will you get us in 3 months to that 50% parameter? And in just about a day and a half, you guys got us to 60%. So we are well on our way. And this is just a quick, brief reminder. Click the freaking bell. It doesn't cost you anything, and you help keep us in the game. It is much appreciated. We've got a RubinReport.locals.com community Q&A for you today, but I'm going to start with a couple stories that I didn't get to earlier in the week, as we do on Fridays, and they will involve stories of liberals who are waking up, leftists who are completely insane, some gender stuff, some race stuff, and a guy telling Biden to go f*** himself. So let's do it. And it's not me, believe it or not. It's some other guy saying it. But let me tell you guys about TWC Health real quick. Guys, are you struggling to get a good night's sleep? News headlines swirling around your head as you toss and turn and stare at the ceiling? Well, you're not alone. Millions of Americans face an epidemic of sleeplessness that is silently harming their health and well-being. The trauma our minds have endured over the last 4.5 years doesn't just turn off with a switch. We have to reset, bring cortisol levels back to normal, and do what we need to find a restful night's sleep. When you lay down at night knowing that you have the key to ensuring a deep and regenerative sleep, well, it's life-changing. But before you default to melatonin, did you know that there are mountains of research revealing its many risks? In fact, melatonin has been banned from over-the-counter sales in many countries, but of course, North America is still going strong. From disrupting sleep cycles to increasing tolerance and dependency over time, if you're in need of a sleep supplement, melatonin's not it. Enter Restful Sleep Formula, crafted by awake doctors, pun not intended, like Dr. Peter McCullough and his chief medical board at the Wellness Company, who understand the mounting harms of melatonin. Restful Sleep Formula is an all-natural alternative to melatonin, packed with ashwagandha, kava, chamomile, passion flower, and more. This powerful capsule has everything you need for a deep, rejuvenating sleep. And here's the kicker: with Restless Sleep Formula, you actually save 56%. Compared to buying each one of these supplements separately, plus you save an extra 10% and get free shipping when you use code Rubin at checkout. Don't just dream of better sleep, make it a reality. Visit twc.health/Rubin today and use code Rubin at checkout. Okay, so you guys know I'm always talking about the liberals waking up, and some of them kind of wake up, but they won't vote the right way, and perhaps some of them will. I think it's the last constituency in America who really could move in a major way. Bill Ackman is a guy who I've mentioned a couple times on the show before. He is a billionaire hedge fund guy. He is a liberal lefty, been a Democrat basically his whole life. We've played a couple clips of him. And here on Twitter, for the first time, he put out two things that I thought were quite interesting. He wrote this: for anyone who is still confused on the topic, I'm not voting for Biden. Now, that's pretty good, lefty liberal, not voting for Biden, because Joe Biden and the Democrats are not liberals. They are woke maniacs, and they are the least liberal thing that you could be. But are you going to vote for Trump? That is the question, Bill Ackman, to which he wrote this: and yes, I am open to voting for Donald Trump. And that, guys, is the opportunity. Donald Trump, if you are watching this, that is the opportunity. You can get all the lefties and liberals who have woken up, and quite literally millions and millions of them have, particularly since October 7th, but in large part also because of the border and because of the economy and more. There is such a chance to take these people and make them part of a wide tent Republican Party. Might I recommend, I think I've done it once or twice, a former Democratic congresswoman named Tulsi Gabbard as VP to help ease that transition. I think that might go a long way. But here's video of Bill Ackman on Lex Fridman's podcast talking a bit more about how things have gotten out of control and how that led to his awakening.
This reveals a deeper problem in terms of ideology and the governance of Harvard, in the maybe the culture of Harvard.
Yes. So on governance, the governance structure is a disaster. On ideology, I was like, how can this be? October 7th, the event that woke me up was 30 student organizations came out with a public letter on October 8th, literally the morning after this letter was created, and said, Israel is solely responsible for Hamas's violent acts. Again, Israel had not even mounted a defense at this point, and there were still terrorists running around in the southern part of Israel. And I'm like, Harvard students, you know, 34 Harvard student organizations signed this letter. And I'm like, what is going on? You know, WTF, right? And that's when I went up on campus and I started talking to the faculty. And that's when I started hearing about, actually, Bill, it's this DEI ideology. I'm like, what? DEI, like diversity, equity, inclusion. I'm familiar with these words and you know, I see this in the corporate context. And they say, yeah. And they started talking to me about this oppressed framework, which is effectively taught on campus and represents the backdrop for many of the courses that are offered and the various, some of the studies and other degree offerings. I'm like, I had not even heard of this. And, you know, I'm a pretty aware person, but I was completely unaware. And basically they're like, look, Israel is deemed an oppressor and the Palestinians are deemed the oppressed. And you take the side of the oppressed, and any acts of the oppressed to dislodge the oppressor, regardless of how vile or barbaric, are okay. I'm like, okay, this is a super dangerous ideology. And really it's sort of ultimately DEI comes out of a kind of a Marxist, socialist backdrop, way to look at the world. And so I think there are a lot of issues with it, but unfortunately it's advancing, I ultimately concluded, racism, as opposed to fighting it, which is what I thought it was ultimately about.
All right. Now, I know that nothing Bill Ackman said there shocked you, right? This is the stuff that we talk about on this show every day. This is the stuff that many of you have known about for years. We were calling it identity politics, then it morphed into wokeness. Then we saw it institutionalized as DEI. You get the oppressor oppressed thing, all of that stuff. So it's not like you just watched that clip and had your mind blown, except that stuff is mind blowing to a certain amount of people. There you have a billionaire hedge fund guy, pretty bright, educated guy, who suddenly now gets it. And there are millions and millions of people like him. And for the first time, for all of you that are always frustrated when I'm like, well, maybe Bill Maher will get there. And in a weird way, it doesn't matter because it's his audience that has to get there more than whether he'll pull the lever for the Republicans or not. Here's a guy that now is saying, and I might vote for Donald Trump. So that is your opportunity, Trump. And you got to figure out how to bring as many of these people in. Now, if you wonder why people are so confused, why so many people, it takes so long for them to swallow that red pill, part of it is because it's not just the education side of things and the corporate side of things, it's that the media lies about absolutely everything and runs cover for the worst sort of ideas and the worst sort of people. Here is CNN contributor, her name is Juliet Kayyem, and listen to her describing what's going on the college campuses right now. She makes three points that I will debunk all of them in real time. Enjoy.
And so colleges and universities have to do three things, and I'm pretty clear about this. One is they do have to allow space for students to protest. I said, you gotta give them an outlet. The students are allowed to protest. This should not be a shock to anyone with teenagers or young adult children. They have strong feelings and they're passionate, because if you just immediately go to arrest, it's gonna cause, I think, some of the what we're seeing on air, which is nothing's happening and then lots is happening. What are the rules of engagement? We cannot put police officers, especially non-university police officers, as we've seen in some of these jurisdictions, just out there fully armed, terrifying students who are, maybe they just view themselves as just expressing their dismay with the war or their criticisms of the Biden administration. So what are the rules of engagement? The second is there a reach out, as we're seeing in some of these colleges and universities, to these student organizations to engage them on what is and is not appropriate activity. In other words, we don't have to treat the protesters as enemies. They just disagree with the institution or they disagree with the government. And that can help de-escalate as well. And then third is the punishment that we're talking about. If someone is violent, if someone is threatening students, if someone ought not to be there and is exacerbating the tension.
Okay, she almost got the third one right, but let's do this real quick on her 3 points. First off, allow them to protest. Yes, they are allowed to protest. I haven't heard anyone, and I mean literally one person, that has said these students don't have the right to protest. You have a First Amendment right to free speech, and of course you can protest. What people are upset by are not just, all right, I'll even give you the throwaways on the call for genocide. Let's say that's, they're using the First Amendment, let's say loosely, or the threats that they're making against Jewish students or that sort of thing, or blocking kids and professors from coming onto campus. The issue is that you can't take over a university and put tents everywhere, right? They're literally occupying. They're obsessed with occupation, but they are occupying the university. That's one thing. Also, she talks about in part one of her 3 points of nonsense. She also talks about the rules of engagement of the police. The police didn't just show up to start terrorizing people. They had campus security there. The kids, and in this case, they are kids. The kids decided that the campus security has no right to do anything. They coordinate and figure out how to lock arms. So campus security can't move anybody and everything else. And then, yes, it gets escalated to the police. That's point number one. Point number two, she says you have to reach out to the students. Of course they've been reaching out to the students. Of course they have. They talk to these organizations. They say, oh, you're allowed to protest in this area. But then when they start taking over that area, calling for genocide, not allowing students to walk by, et cetera, then there is a problem. And third, she sort of got the punishment part, right? Yeah, you can't directly call for violence, so there has to be some punishment there. And yes, you have to see who and who isn't a student. And I suspect that when they really start diving into some of this stuff, they are going to find that huge swaths of these people that are, again, are well-coordinated and well-funded, which is why they're all showing up with the same freaking tent and instructions, and they chant like robots, I think they're going to find that a whole bunch of them are not students at all. But then, of course, the next part of this is that there is a media that works. Often people graduate from these nonsensical universities with these degrees in stupidity, and then they become members of the media. One of these people is Mark Lamont Hill. He used to be a CNN guy. He's now on some other network. But here he is. It's just a 5-second quick clip. And when we talk about free speech and calls for violence and how they're using our rules and regulations against us, well, here you go.
Revolution is always violent.
Oh, so you're there for the revolution. They talk about that all the time. They want a revolution. They want the revolution over there as it pertains to Israel, but they want the revolution right here, which is why they're also chanting all this anti-American stuff. And he's telling you that it's violent. So is that a call for violent revolution? And is that protected by the First Amendment? This is where they're getting as close to the line as they possibly can, and they are doing it intentionally. So, okay, we've dealt with sort of the bad guys and the agitators and then just like the teachers that have no balls and all the rest of it. And that wasn't a trans joke. These people just, they have no set of values. But then there's just also, and this might be the largest swath of them, there are a bunch of kids who have no f-ing idea what they believe or why they are even at these protests. Check out this video. This is extraordinary.
And what would you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stops. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing?
About what?
About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either.
Oh. I came from Colombia. I was there off at Colombia, and we came down. They said NYU students needed our support. So I came down. I heard there's lots of cops. Some people were saying it was getting dangerous.
Did you catch that? She's a Columbia student who doesn't know why she's protesting, and she's protesting at NYU, okay? NYU, down by Union Station. If you know anything about New York City, Columbia, up Upper West Side, high Upper West Side. So she got on the train, she went all the way down there to get down there and not know why she's there in the first, and the friend, well, I wish we were more educated on this, the friend who's obviously a wizard, I mean, she's wearing a mask, for God's sakes. So you have a series of idiots, and then you have genuine jihadists and morons and call, you know, the revolutionary class. But you've got to understand these people are being funded. They are being well funded. Actually, it's a fact, Wall Street Journal, some anti-Israel protests are paid. Rockefeller and a hot diggity dog, don't call me an anti-Semite, Soros grants are subsidizing those who disrupt college campuses. So when you see these REI tents, and you see all of the stuff that they have, understand it is well funded, that Qatar, the government of, I'm sorry, Qatar has given more than $3 billion to our universities. Do you think they're doing it because they just love us, or could there be something else involved? Now let's shift from jihad. Let's shift from violent jihad to sexual jihad. Because the other thing, it's coming, man. Sexual jihad, it's coming. That could be a title of my next book. Who wants to draw that for me? That you draw that for me, we're going to give you a little extra credit on that. The other thing, of course, is that they're trying to chop off all of the boys' genitals and chop off the girls' breasts. Riley Gaines, who is just an absolutely spectacular young woman. She, of course, was a swimmer here in Florida. Then this dude, Leah Thomas, with a wang, who, as Connor has rightly pointed out many times, he never got it chopped off, started swimming as a woman, we believe using the penis as a propeller, and that's an advantage. It's just an advantage. She has now come out and basically been the number one advocate in terms of getting dudes out of women's sports, a position that every sane person had 20 years ago. She went on Sage Steele's podcast to talk a little bit about how absolutely out of control this whole thing has been since the day she met that dude.
Actually, the first time I saw him was in the locker room. Oh. And so, as I said, which let me just kind of set the scene. A swimming locker room is not a place of modesty. These suits that you put on, your racing suits, it takes about 15, 20 minutes to really poke and prod yourself into these suits. They're paper thin, they're skin tight, your nail beds are bleeding by the end of it. Most of the time you bring gloves so your fingernails don't poke through your suit, or so your fingers literally don't bleed because it's so intense. You have friends like helping you try and like tuck skin rolls in your suit, all this stuff. So it's a very intimate, not modest environment. And there's also a lot of course, fully undressing.
Of course.
You get to the pool in your clothes, you change into your warm-up suit, just a normal practice suit. Then after warm-up, you change into your racing suit, which is where, you know, you're really fighting to put this thing on. Then after that, after you race, you come back and you change back into your practice suit to go warm down. Then after that, you come and put your clothes back on. So there's like, I mean, five times of fully undressing in one session. And we had multiple sessions every day to set the scene. So I'm in the locker room. I have my back turned, of course, undressing. I believe I was going from my practice suit back into my street clothes. And all of a sudden, you hear a man's voice in that locker room. Of course, it's awkward. It's embarrassing. It's uncomfortable. It was innate for every single girl in that locker room to, like, cover themselves, whether it was with their hands or their clothes or their towels, and to leave as quickly as they could. Of course, it's an utter violation. It felt like betrayal. It was traumatizing.
Now, the reason I'm showing you that clip, because it gets into the real, like, nitty-gritty of this. We can all talk about the idea version of it and drugging these kids and the chemical castration and all these things, but you see what they're doing to young girls? To young girls who just want to swim, just want to play basketball, go back to the locker room, wrestle, whatever it might be. The way they are insulting them, the way they're going after them, the way they're trying to shame them. And Riley Gaines has been treated absolutely horribly by the media. She's thought of as this far-right maniac. I mean, it's the usual stuff that we've all been served. But this is what they are going for when it comes to, we're working on getting her on the show, right? I think she's going to be on in a couple of weeks. But this is what they are going for. They are trying to destroy every norm. So, like, you might say it would be a norm that at college universities they wouldn't call for genocide, but that norm has been destroyed. You might say it would be a norm that a dude with a wang shouldn't be in the chick's locker room, but that norm has been blown apart. And they want to blow apart every norm so that they can destroy democracy. Here's video of a large woman who has run for several things. She wanted to be governor. I think she wanted to be senator. Anyway, she fails at whatever she does, but she keeps getting put on television. Yes, I'm talking about Stacey Abrams, and here she is loving DEI because she is a living, walking, breathing version of it.
We have to remember that every victory, built into every victory are the seeds of defeat, but also built into every defeat are the seeds of victory. We have seen victory, but we cannot rest on that victory and think that it is impermeable and impervious to harm. What we know is that the attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, is an attack on democracy, it's an attack on education, it's an attack on how our economy works, because what Reverend Warnock and John Ossoff, what Senator Ossoff and Senator Warnock represent are pathways to the American dream. They are proof points. And those proof points scare those who want this world to be more narrow and more restrictive. And so we have to recognize that our opportunity to hold to those successes requires our constant attention, our constant tending. You know, voting is not magic. Voting is medicine. But it also means that it's a constant engagement, that we can't have a moment of success. We have to keep working constantly at moving ourselves forward.
Voting is not magic, it's medicine. It's just words. You see this, they just use words. And she said narrow and restrictive, and certainly not the type of underwear she wears. But look, look, DEI is not an attack on democracy. DEI is completely counter to everything that America has ever been about. We are for meritocracy. We are for equal rights. Get out there, see if you can make something of yourself, right? I am not, and I am old school. I am not for discriminating against a young Asian kid because he's Asian and worked hard and his parents worked hard and he cared about education and took all the extra credit classes and maybe didn't even go to summer camp because his parents kept him in mathnasium or whatever it's called. You know those places in the strip malls? Always, horrible. But they do send some kids there, and then you want to discriminate against those kids so that you can put kids in this college of another skin color. And then, by the way, you degrade the university, and next thing you know, you have a whole elite university where they're calling for genocide. So Stacey Abrams, yes, you are a function of DEI, but it has nothing to do with democracy. I want to show you one other clip, and then we'll get to the Rubin Report community Q&A. I just thought this was spectacular. You know, we're watching so many people across the spectrum break away from the Democrats, and it's wonderful. And again, this is Trump's great opportunity to be the unifier, and I hope he will take that opportunity. But check this out. This was from Newsmax. A Newsmax reporter, it's a quick clip, was asking just a union worker, blue collar, just this is the type of New Yorker that I remember from my childhood that I miss. There aren't many of them left. Just asking him what he thinks about Joe Biden, and listen to the brilliance.
What's it like seeing so many Republicans in Manhattan, so many Trump supporters in Manhattan? Does that surprise you?
No, not at all. It's turning now. Trump's turn again.
What's your message to Joe Biden?
F*** you.
I mean, simple, clean. I love that he's got the box of pizza with him and everything else. Anyway, we had a little fun with that. Enjoy.
What's your message to Joe Biden?
F*** you.
Miyagi, that's right. Wax on, wax off. Hopefully we will be waxing off Joe Biden soon enough. All right, we got a community Q&A coming up in just a second, but let me talk to you guys about PDS debt. Guys, getting in debt is easy. Getting out, well, the system's set up so that you don't. The anxiety, the stress, it can be soul crushing. Everyone gets all that. And I'm here to tell you, you don't have to do it alone. There is a way out. Help is available thanks to PDS debt. PDS debt has customized options for anyone struggling with credit cards, personal loans, collections, or medical bills. If you're making payments every month on your debt and the balances aren't going down, this program is for you. PDS Debt provides options that consolidate your debts into one low monthly payment. Everyone with $10,000 or more in eligible debt qualifies, and there's no minimum credit score required. Bad and fair credit accepted. Save thousands in interest and fees. Pay off your debt in a fraction of the time. PDS Debt is a top-rated company on Google, has an A-plus rating on the Better Business Bureau. PDS Debt cares about helping you get out of debt. Check out all their reviews and see how many mention PDS Debt employees by name. It's incredible. Get a free debt analysis right now at pdsdebt.com/Rubin. It only takes 30 seconds. That's pdsdebt.com/Rubin. pdsdebt.com/Rubin. And now back to me. All right, let's dive right in. Janine says, Dave, we made it. Not quite to Florida, but we were able to actually buy a house in the free state of Tennessee after renting for 15 years in that crazy state we don't mention anymore. Congratulations. The house needs some TLC, but my worries have all disappeared. Pretty sure it's the clean air and non-toxic food. I'm still getting used to the glass top stove, but I've never had one so easy to clean. We do most of our cooking on the smoker BBQ anyway, so it's all good. Thank you for continuing to be a voice of reason amid the chaos. Keep on fighting the good fight. Oh, it's not even a question, but I'm thrilled to hear that. I can't tell you how many messages I get from people who say that they moved partly because of me, usually to Florida, but the fact that you're in Tennessee, you got the glass top stove right now, which I know that one's tough. When we moved into this house, our area is not, they don't have gas lines to the house. So we had to put a propane tank in because if you love to cook, you really want that flame. And we had the glass stove here, the electric stove, which we didn't love. So maybe you can do that too if you wanna, if you're really into cooking and everything else. But I'm thrilled. You took your life into your own hands. I have no doubt that you'll be flourishing in Tennessee. My cousin just moved to Tennessee. So there are other sane people there. And congratulations to you. It's great. Tony says, how hopeful are you that the Jewish community who has historically voted left will shift toward the right as the result of all the craziness? Do we need to run a compilation of Democrat politicians refusing to condemn Hamas and violence on college campuses in order to wake them up? Well, I am quite enthused, actually. I think this is the great opportunity. I've already said it about Trump a couple of times. This is his opportunity to take these people. Bill Ackman, I believe he's Jewish. It's people like him that are now waking up. People, you know, everyone has their red pill moment. If you do wake up, you have a red pill moment, and then it doesn't all just happen overnight, right? Many of us have been through this. Sometimes it can take years. You kind of you move forward. It's two steps forward, and then sometimes it's three steps back. Like, there is a process there. The Jewish community, which largely has voted Democrat, I think is really realizing the insanity. It's not just the way that Biden and I would say the Hamas caucus have thrown Israel under the bus, and to watch Chuck Schumer, who should be booed anytime he steps foot in a temple for the rest of his life, try to throw Israel on the bus. It's also, even if you were Jewish and you didn't particularly care about Israel, and I would say this for any American, even if you don't particularly care about Israel, you should care about the border here, right? You should care about making sure that your cities and your properties and your communities are safe. These are things that the Democrats aren't very good at. So I think Jews largely will wake up. Let's put it this way. I think there will be the biggest shift in the Jewish vote probably, I don't know, I can't remember the last time there was a massive shift in the Jewish vote. It's probably pre-World War II or something like that, where there weren't even many Jews in America. So I think there will be a massive shift, yes. So the answer is yes. Lauren says, can you name three creatives of today and describe what they are doing to give you hope for tomorrow? Ooh, that's a good question. Like, three creatives of today, like three people that are doing something a little different. Boy. The easy one is that Elon is the Renaissance man of our time, right? And he's sending us to Mars and all sorts of stuff. So like that's like the bumper sticker one. That's the most easy one. You know, I can give you guys out of my world, but no, like artists or musicians, you got a musician you're into now that's new? I don't remember the, Connor likes Taylor Swift. She's got the new album. I don't know. You know, I don't remember the last time, you know, there's a pretty decent art scene here in Miami, and I go to some of these things and I'm not moved all that often, honestly. And even on the music side, when's the last time you listened? You know what? This is a rare one where I'm going to kick a question back to you guys for the comments and in locals. It's like, what's moving you lately artistically and creatively? I can't think of that much, which probably is indicative of sort of the calcification of our society right now that we have to get on the other side of. Mitchell says, how about a tequila update? Okay, I can't answer this question. Are we going to see a Blanco, Reposado, and an Anejo? Any chances for a gift box that includes a punchable Gavin Newsom blow-up clown? That is a good idea. I will look into the clown. We are doing a Reposado for our first one. So a Blanco, obviously, is not aged. That's a Blanco is traditionally, you're going to have it with the margarita. Like, it's not a sipping tequila, usually. It's for mixers, generally speaking. Reposados are aged 3 months, so they're the mid-tier. And Anejos, I think, are always aged at least 6 to 9 months. Then there's also extra Anejos, even longer than that. I felt Reposado was the right one. I actually like Reposados even more than Anejos because it's like a softer taste because the aging process hasn't added that much flavor. I am going to Mexico when are we going? We're going in like 2 weeks, right? My business partner and Connor and I are going down to Mexico. We're going to be doing a bunch of tastings. We're going to be meeting with the distributors and we're going to the agave fields and the whole thing to figure out a little bit more on the flavor profile and everything else. We've already figured out the logo. We figured out the bottle type. We're figuring out a few other things. My hope, but don't hold me to this. It takes time because importing liquor, it's extremely expensive and I had to create a separate company to do it. And there's also like distribution issues. It's not as easy as just selling a t-shirt. Anyway, my hope is that when we come back in September, we can launch right around then. Doc says, what's going on with conservative media? It seems we are losing our collective minds with infighting. Shapiro versus Owens versus Carlson. The things being said by some are quite weird. Why can't the right get it together and have one voice like the left does? I know we favor individualism, but come on, man. We don't get many chances like this upcoming election. Well, look, that's why I'm trying to stay out of it. Simple as that. I see much bigger opportunity to grow a tent right now. I'm not that interested in what our little fights are on the right. I know that there, by the way, are fights that are important to have. Like, we could have serious political arguments about foreign policy and interventionism. We can talk about whatever, you know, some people on the right now want to go back. You know, the right largely wanted the reversal of Roe v. Wade to kick it to the states. Now there suddenly is a movement on the right to, you know, basically push Trump, if he becomes president, to go for a federal abortion ban again. Like, that seems crazy to me. Like, I'm not that interested in the fighting on the right. And I think you've probably seen a little shift in the show in the last couple weeks. I am so focused on getting these people like Bill Ackman and like Bill Maher, and I guess anyone named Bill, to vote Republican, not because the Republicans are great, but the Democrats are evil at this point. We have to save this country right now. Like, we're there. I do not think the United States of America can survive another 4 years of, it's not Biden, it's whatever the f*** is behind Biden. I don't think we can survive it. And Donald Trump is flawed. He is beyond flawed. But this is the opportunity. And if we don't take this opportunity, I think you will see the states go their separate ways. I'll basically be for it at that point, because the big thing is really broken. So I hope that some of the people on the right that are involved in some of the fighting can just let it go. It's not getting us anywhere. It's not getting us anywhere. We have much big, if we agree on 80%, the 20% that we disagree on, let's punt it for now and keep our eyes on the prize. Talway says, given your mental breakdown, your words, not mine, a few days ago, what are your plans for Off the Grid August this year, since you now have kids, since it seems you're more ready for it than ever? So for those of you that didn't see our show, that was on Tuesday. Was that Tuesday? I think it was Tuesday's show. There was something about Monday night. I was at the Passover Seder and I'm with family and we're reading the story of Passover, and it's this incredible eternal story about, you know, bondage, slavery to freedom, and the Hebrews leaving, the Jews leaving Egypt to go to the promised land, Israel, and talking about how the fight for freedom comes every generation. There is a new fight, and it all felt so real and true to me. And I felt this more and more. I wrote a bit about this in Don't Burn This Country, actually. I felt this more and more, particularly as it pertains to Passover. But, you know, frogs dropping from the sky and boils and, you know, killing of the firstborn. And it's a story, right? And we can all debate the literalness of the story or the why stories are important. But that all felt more real to me. The rivers turning red, than the nonsense that I was talking about the next day with Ilhan Omar's daughter claiming that someone used chemical weapons on her and everything else. So I had a bit of a mental breakdown. I think I cursed more on that show than I've ever had before. I didn't punch the clown at the end, but I ended the show with a clown at the desk instead of me, and it was cathartic. The other thing was, I've been playing a lot of basketball, and I was so banged up, and my whole body was aching and hurt, and my neck was really bothering me. So there was just like a confluence of events that led to that. I do feel much better. And to directly answer your question, I'm very much looking forward to Off the Grid August. Again, it's one of the things that has kept me sane. I think this will be our eighth year of doing it. No TV, no news, no computer, no phone, no iPad, no nothing for a month. We'll do a little something without the kids. And then mostly we'll just be here hunkering down and enjoying the summer. But just getting away from the thing, letting the brain reset. You know, I think if I'm not mistaken, the Republican convention, can you check this real quick? The RNC convention is the end of July. So if that's correct, I will see the nomination of Trump, I suppose. But the DNC convention is in August. So I will miss that. And God only knows if Biden will even be alive or what they might do or what level of chaos we're going to have on the streets. They're also doing the Democrat convention in Chicago. So how many people will be shot? We will find out. And I guess I will find out in September. Rick says, is the left going to come up with something to riot over every 4 years to try to get their person in office? This Hamas garbage in the universities is beyond moronic. I don't know how this helps them this time, but the timing seems suspect. Keep Biden out of debates, give them a new talking point, takes all the attention away from the other screw-ups, right? It does take attention away from the other screw-ups, right? Because suddenly we're focused less, shows like this, we're focused a little less on the border, on what's going on with the economy and everything else. We're seeing this new thing. So yeah, it's a constant shell game that they're doing. Look, they do this. They do this. BLM is, which has now burst into this Hamas thing, they are highly funded and they are coordinated, and it's the same people, and it's not just students, it's activists, it's paid activists. And the Democrats, when the Democrats want the pressure on, They can turn it on and they can turn it off when they want it off. That's why we had all the riots when Trump was president. And the second that Biden became president, we didn't have the riots. Did we solve systemic racism? Did we solve all those police murder issues and everything else? I'm using air quotes there, obviously. Of course we didn't, but they can turn it on and they want it turned on right now. They need you to look away from how they've screwed up so much of the country and basically just kind of point blame to Israel or whatever else. So that is what they do. And again, it's just one of those things. Know what they do and then figure out how to operate with it. Abnabin says, how is it that Christians can honestly criticize rational atheists as they do, lumping us all in with the leftist freaks that they think are a god themselves, thus obviously not atheists, when it's clear it's the same thing happening to Christianity, transmission pastors and such? Am I wrong to be so angry at that hypocrisy? So to just parse that a little bit, I think what you're saying is that there's that some Christians point to all atheists and blame all the leftist lunacy on them. I hope you're not referring to me in that case. Obviously, there are good atheists. There are good people of every faith and non-faith. And as I've talked about with Dennis Prager and many others, you don't have to be religious to be moral. I think religion or some set of belief does help organize a society. But I would say it's a mistake. We, again, in this wide tent thing that's happening right now, we want everybody. So there's a group, Atheists for Liberty. They believe in liberty. We want them on our side, right? You know, we've even seen some of the non-woke libertarian, some of the non-woke atheists wake up to some of the stuff that's going on. Sam Harris, who I, you know, had some relationship with for some time, he's been pretty good as it pertains to what's going on these college campuses and Israel. Richard Dawkins has said that he wants to live in a Christian society as an atheist. There's several others. If you haven't seen it yet, my chat with Pete Boghossian that we put up this week, lifelong atheist, wrote a book called A Handbook for Creating Atheists. He has now come to the realization that you need some level of belief in society to organize things. So the last thing that I would want are Christians fighting atheists. You want to fight the woke. You want to fight the people who are using the levers of power of government against you and your faith. You don't want to look at all of those people and lump them in the way they would do to you. So I'm with you. Robert says, I can understand why people wouldn't want student loan forgiveness, but why is no one trying to meet in the middle? Someone in a Republican office could suggest reducing the cost of education itself. Why is our government making money off our kids going to college? It shouldn't take 30 years to pay off a student loan. Well, it's a great point. I mean, government's not good at anything. I have some sympathy with these young people who are told that they need these degrees. They get degrees in things that don't mean much of anything. They then walk out of college and they have just insane amounts of debt. Can you imagine now, like you're 22 years old, you just get out of college, you're sacked with $150,000. No, if you go to Columbia, you have about $280,000 debt potentially. That's about 70 grand a year. You've learned nothing other than that America is evil and you've learned that everyone you knew is racist and your grandparents were horrible people and all that stuff. Now you have to get a job and then you start looking at taxes differently because you've got a job and suddenly you go, wait a minute, the government's stealing my money. Now you're going through your red pill, but you've got all that debt to pay. So is there a better way to do it? Well, I think the better way to do it is to not be sending kids to these schools. There are vocational schools. You can do an apprenticeship or an internship. I mentioned this week, we hired 2 new interns. I pay my interns. I want them to learn something here. And then if they're amazing at what they do, maybe they'll stay here long-term. Phoenix right here, who's my executive producer now, was my intern in college. So like there is opportunity out there that is not just you just going through the machine in the way the machine has set out things to be. But yes, there's probably other ways that we could lower tuitions. There are state schools with lower tuitions, but the state schools have been infected. So it's a tricky one. Cassifere says, Mayorkas always reminds me of the subhuman scientist named Ash in the first Alien movie. He is so robotic, unshakable, and repetitive in his answers. It creeps me out and it makes me wonder if he is somehow an alien in the same way you talk about Newsom. Know what I mean? First off, I love the reference. And if you read Don't Burn This Country, I tell the story of Ash from the original Alien movie because he's the medical officer on board. They don't know, or you don't know as the audience, you don't know that he's a robot until later in the movie. He's the guy that admires the alien. And he admires the alien because he says, well, look, the alien is remorseless. We don't know why the alien's doing what it's doing. It's killing everybody systemically on this ship. We're all going to die. But he admires that it is doing what it set out to do. I would say a guy like Mayorkas, I see your connection to Mayorkas. Like, there's a robotic way that he speaks. There's a coldness to it, a disconnect and all that. But it's why I think that all of these woke people, sort of, it's not that I admire what they're accomplishing. They are accomplishing evil. But if they do it while we're calling it out and we're pointing to it and we're saying that's bad stuff and they're still getting it done, well, then they're accomplishing what they want to do. And it's not that it should be admired, but there's something to learn from it. How about that? So that you can stop them from happening. I should watch Alien again. The first one is, well, Alien 1 and Alien 2 are amazing. And then Alien 3 and Resurrection kind of sucky. And then Prometheus, which was the reboot, it was a prequel, was absolutely fantastic, I thought. And then there was another one. What was the one after Prometheus? They pick it up on the next planet. Not Retaliation. Resurrection? No, I just said that. After Prometheus was Covenant. Which was also excellent, and they really set that one up for another movie, but I don't think they're doing a new Alien, but I don't think it's a follow-up to that one. Frank says, we always hear conservatives saying we need less government, but there are cases when government intervention is needed. For example, DeSantis legislation to protect women's sports or property rights against squatters. What are the criteria, in your opinion, to establish when a government intervention is not only a good thing, but it's critically needed when instead it's an erosion of people's freedom and a dangerous expansion of government control? It's a great question. And this is why in college, instead of teaching people about colonization and the destruction of America, they should try to teach civics 101. Yes, DeSantis has done an incredible job of using the government for the right purposes. When he went after Disney, it was to take away special privileges that Disney had, thus evening the playing field, which is what you'd want in a capitalist society. That's one example. When DeSantis pushed for legislation that would make sure that boys couldn't be in girls' sports, it was to respect individual rights. When he enforced further, he went further with, you know, because they were pushing all these squatters' rights laws in other states, he proactively went ahead and made sure that that sort of thing would not happen here. So I believe, see, this is why the purely libertarian position that the government really only exists to protect property rights and nothing else is nice intellectually, but in practice, there are times when the government has to get involved. The government has to get involved to make sure people are not just on your property and protecting your property rights, but stopping you from that pursuit of happiness, infringing on your free speech, etc. So I would say you want to be very careful with this. And I think DeSantis has picked these fights properly. And, you know, it's why just in this last week, when they started trying to put tents up at FSU, Florida State University, they went down pretty damn quickly because you can't occupy. You can protest peacefully, but you can't permanently occupy a state university. That's not an infringement on anyone's free speech. So you want the government to do limited things, limited in scope, and not solve all of your problems. Ronald Reagan, the 8 scariest words in the English language, I'm from the government and I'm here to help, because it will always get worse. Kelly, after listening to your interview with Peter Boghossian, I'm feeling a little more anxious about our future. I understand the we got what we voted for argument, but many of us did not vote for these policies that are destroying America. What are your thoughts on the future of the West in light of all these protests for terrorism? You always leave us with an optimistic ending, but today I'm not feeling it. So in that interview with Pete, if you haven't seen it yet, we get into this. Pete, who is a professor at Portland State University, so lived in Portland for most of his adult life. He no longer lives there. We started talking about what has happened to these Democrat-run cities and how much worse than they can get, and you know, stuff that you've all heard before. And yeah, there were moments of it where it was like, it was kind of black-pilled, because not everyone in those, first off, no one deserves to live in those conditions. Even the people that voted in, they don't deserve, you know, I don't think they karmically deserve it or something like that. Like, you voted in, you made mistakes to vote in. So you did some bad things that got you to this position, but they don't deserve to live in Sodom and Gomorrah, basically. I would say if you live in one of those places, the best thing you can do is what the person in the earlier question did, which is just get out and try to find greener pastures. I am very bullish on some of the cities in America, the cities and the states, but I'm not very bullish on the country, but things could turn around if that orange man does that wide 10 thing I've been asking. All right, we got to do two more real quick. Kyle says, Dave, in all your travels to Sanibel Island, have you ever had breakfast at the Lighthouse Cafe? I have many times. Is it still open? You know, the island was crushed by Hurricane Ian. I went there a couple of weeks ago to see a little bit of the reconstruction and just spend a little money on the island to help some of the people there. And they are rebuilding fast, but it was a Category 5, basically, that used that barrier island just as just the complete brunt of the storm, and it was really rough. All right, give me one more here. Let's go to the next one. One more. Do you think that big corporations that have worked towards disrupting, attempting to subvert our society and exploiting people via data mining or without consent by obfuscation, algorithmic manipulation, privacy infringement, war lobbying, DEI, CCP capitulation, will see any major blowback or penalties? Do you know if anyone's paying attention to such a trend? As you can see, I'm in a bit of a rush. I got a thing in a minute. I don't think we will see much of a pushback on a lot of it, but I think good people will build new things. We will build new phones. We will go to other planets. We will build new institutions of higher learning. But a lot of the stuff that exists that is corroded and crumbling will continue to corrode and crumble. And the choice will be yours, whether you want to stay in a crumbling system, whether that's the city, or using products that don't work because they've hired the wrong engineers, or you want to blaze the new trail. I think you know which one I want to do. Part two of my interview with Pete Pagosian's up right now. Full things up, ad free at Locals. There's no post-game show today, so have a great weekend, everybody. And we leave you with the elderly man pretending to be president.
I'm Joe Biden. This is the Wired autocomplete interview I'm about to do.
Have you ever Googled yourself before?
No, I try not to. First card here. Did Joe Biden never have a job? No, never, never, never. And how can you have dignity if you're working 40 hours a week? So after all these years, it's very disappointing to be known for two things. My Ray-Bans and ice cream. That's all I do is eat ice cream. Yeah, I've had a job dividing us based on race, religion, ethnicity. Why is Joe Biden running for president? My wife was pushing me. It was bribery on the part of Barack. I said, if you agree, we'll get you a dog again. As long as I didn't have to do anything other than play myself, I said I'd do it. Okay. What is Joe Biden's immigration policy? We are really not following the law very well these days, which is an impeachable offense. What is Joe Biden's view on education? My wife, Jill, has a great expression. She's a doctor. Why is Joe Biden a good candidate? Unfortunately, I'm not. You can't afford health care. You can't afford to take care of your children. You can't afford housing. Anyway, the point is, I love ice cream, always have. My favorite, by the way, is chocolate chip.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rubin Report. You can watch the show live every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern and 8 a.m. Pacific on Rumble, Locals, and YouTube. Don't forget to rate, review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. And you can join me for the post-game wrap-up every day after the show at rubinreport.locals.com.